Fishing like a local isn't just about catching fish. It's about connecting with the environment and the people who call it home. It's about hearing the stories and traditions that have been passed down for generations and sharing unforgettable moments with the people you meet along the way. Fishing like a local is having an experience that stays with you forever. And with Fishing Booker, you can experience it too, no matter where you are. Discover your next adventure on Fishing Booker.
What's going on, everybody? It's the Tom Rowland Podcast brought to you by Starbright. We have a fantastic guest today, somebody I've been trying to get on the podcast for a while. And as you're going to learn, he is very busy fishing over 320 days a year all over the world, does all kinds of cool stuff. It's Captain Ryan Harrington, and he is on right now. Here we go.
All right, I'm Captain Ryan Harrington, and this is the Tom Rowland Podcast.
Ryan Harrington. What's going on, man?
Oh, not much, man. Busy, but found a good day to meet up with you. It's raining and windy out there, so this is perfect.
Yeah, well, we've been trying to set this up for quite some time, and really happy to have you on here. What, I mean, man, looking back through the text that we've exchanged, you've been to all over the place. Where have you been lately?
Yeah, it's probably a shorter list to say where I have not been.
Yeah, but,
that's kind of how I've rolled the last 14 or 15 years since I've been guiding. It's and even before I was guiding, you know, I'm kind of the guy that never says no to an opportunity, and blessed with a family that's always been okay with that. But that's my thing, you know. It's opened up a lot of doors for me.
Yeah,
really, since I was a little kid, you know, these opportunities, and I've learned a lot along the way. The less you say no, the more you get to experience. In all walks of life.
So. That's a pretty good piece of advice.
Yeah.
Really. So how are these opportunities coming to you as employment, or as like you could tag along with a trip, or how do most of these opportunities happen for you?
Yeah. So I was, kind of blessed from an early age to get experiences in all levels of fishing. You know, I've been anything from inshore to offshore, kingfish, billfish, you name it. I kind of do it all. I'm very well-rounded. And so that opens up more doors. You know, right. Sometimes I think if you're very, one-sided and fish one certain, type of fishing, you get your certain season, you get your prime times and your prime areas. So that limits you more opposed to being, you know, well-rounded. I think the more types of fishing that you can do, the more opportunities are there. So to answer your question, you know, some are employment, some are, hey, we need your help. Come either run the boat or be an angler or a mate. That's the other thing too, is I love, you know, running a boat, being the captain, and I'm happy to be a mate and rig ballyhoo and not touch a rod. So that again opens up more opportunities as well.
So what are some of your favorite?
Man, it's I get that question a lot. You know, I even get the question of what do you do, because I do it all.
Yeah.
So my full-time, you know, I inshore fish in Tampa Bay. I guide inshore for Tampa Bay, snook, trout, redfish, tarpon. And when it comes to my favorite, that's a question I get on guided trips in Tampa Bay. And, you know, people think I'm bluffing when I say, hey, a Tampa Bay redfish. And they go, but we've seen your Instagram. We've seen what you do. You catch all these big, cool fish around the world. And honestly, it is. It's a Tampa Bay redfish. Yes, I've caught bigger fish. You know, you can say more interesting or bigger or more exotic places. But it's my roots in Tampa Bay. And there's, you know, fired up Tampa Bay redfish. So that'll never get old, ever.
Is that what it goes back to, that it's like a roots thing, like that's what you did growing up, that's what ignited the fire of fishing, and that's why it's so close to your heart, or is there something else about the Tampa Bay redfish?
Yeah, it's weird, because everything else is cool, you know, like I can't put down any of the fishing I do, you know, catching sailfish in Costa Rica, it's awesome, catching, you know, blue marlin, catching tuna in Louisiana, or, you know, yellowfin tuna in the Bahamas, like everything I do, it has its special place. But maybe it is because it's home. It's what I'm used to. It's home. It's got that homey feeling. But they're just awesome fish. We get them year round. They fight. You know, you can take all the pictures you want, drop them on their face, and still release them. They're going to be happy, healthy fish. You know, not every fishery is that healthy, that hardy. So it's a good fish, and it's fun for all ages. Easy to get to. You can fish them 12 months a year, regardless of weather. I think it's just a good all around target, 365 days a year.
Yeah, nice. Well, before we get into many other questions, we have this thing we do on the called the hot seat, which we ask some questions to get to know you better, for the audience to get to know you better. Some of them we just covered, but so let's run down this list, and then often that gives us a lot of other things to talk about. So it's kind of an either or question, just rapid fire. Sunrise or sunset?
Ooh, that's a good one. Sunrise.
Spin or bait caster?
Spin.
Inshore or offshore?
That's a loaded one. Well, let's go. Man, let's go inshore.
Okay. Coffee, tea, or energy drink?
Coffee.
Mountains or beaches?
Beaches.
Winter Olympics or Summer Olympics?
Summer.
Drive or fly?
Fly.
Office, friends, or parks and rec?
Office.
Tarpon, marlin, or redfish, which we just kind of covered.
We did. That's, man, depends on the day.
Yeah, depends on the day and the location, probably.
Right.
Best win or catch in your career that you can, comes to mind.
Yeah, that's loaded too. That could be a whole segment right there.
Yeah, let's go.
Narrow down once.
We got all day.
Yeah, narrow down is really, really tough. You know, there's so many that come to mind, and it evolves over the years. If you were to ask me that question 15 years ago, it was different than 10 and 5. And I think now having kids, you know, it's changed. The fish might not get bigger on that answer. They might get smaller, but it might be a first.
Yes.
So it's all about the smile.
Right. How many kids do you have?
Two.
What?
Two girls. Seven.
Two girls.
One.
Nice. How old?
Yeah. Seven and one.
Seven and one. Wow.
Yeah. Yeah.
Wow. Yep. Awesome. Wow. Yeah. I have three kids. They're all grown these days.
Yeah.
My youngest is 20. And my oldest is 26. My middle one's
24. You made it through the gauntlet.
Well, yeah. We're still moving through the gauntlet, but you know, it's there is light at the end of the tunnel for yeah, you in your position. Sometimes it doesn't seem like there is, but there is light at the end of the tunnel. A movie that makes you laugh.
I have only seen two or three, so that's not a good question for me. I'm not a TV watcher.
You've only seen three movies in your life.
That I've stayed up for. I'll start about 15 with my daughter, but I'm 10 minutes in. I don't care what time of day or how exciting the movie is. I'm over there snoring.
Nice. Yes. If you take a fishing guide on a day off to the movie theater, it's an immediate nap. Hard working fishing guide, because you get in the theater, it's nice and cool, it's dark, you lay your head back a little bit, and out go the lights.
Yep.
It is. I'm with you. I do the same thing. Text or calls?
Text.
Instagram or Twitter?
Instagram.
One thing you're afraid of?
Snakes.
One piece of technology that you rely on heavily?
Cell phone.
Favorite fishing destination?
Costa Rica.
Best piece of advice you remember being given?
Don't say no.
Okay. That leads us right in. So that's awesome. So don't say no. And that sounds like that has opened a lot of doors for you and sent you to places all over the globe. And when did you first start to think, okay, I'm doing this. I'm going to say yes. Maybe the first couple are easy. As you start building your career, you've got other things going on as well, family. It becomes harder and harder sometimes to say yes or don't say no. So what was the first kind of opportunity that you remember that you jumped on?
So it's kind of cool as far as I'm on the west coast of Florida, so we're not really known for like a billfish destination. We have a great fishery out there offshore, but it's about 100 miles to get to. And I was born in 1981. So you got to think in the 80s, going out 100 miles. Now it's not as big of a deal, but back then was the Wild West. Very, very, very few people did it, and very few kids did it. So at an early age, I was born and raised on a small little island called Tierra Verde in Tampa Bay. Back then there was, I don't know, maybe 1,000 people that lived out there total. And we were blessed with a neighbor that owned a big Ford dealership here, had a 55-foot Hatteras. And that's how I got into fishing. But to get to the short and sweet question of, you know, when did I start saying, not saying no, that was it. So I started billfishing at 9 years old. out here on the west coast of Florida. So there's some places, you know, the Keys, or some places it's a short run in a center console and you can catch a sailfish, but we had to go offshore for 4 days straight.
Wow.
So that was probably easier to say no to, being a kid. And you know, a lot of kids are playing baseball or riding their bikes, doing other things. And to really go away from that for 4 days at a time, into the Wild West, you know, worried about getting seasick. And back then as a kid, you don't know, there's sharks and whales, and you know, it's a scary place to go out there, especially in the middle of the night for 4 days. But that's what I did. And then I opened my eyes to, wow, that's pretty cool. So as an early age, any opportunity to do anything outdoors, I just always said yes to.
So would your dad go on that trip too, or like?
Yeah. So kind of how that worked was, my dad, he's from Wisconsin. So he wasn't, you know, that into saltwater fishing, but our neighbor and him were best friends.
Okay.
So he would fish, you know, with him. That's who I learned from, was our neighbor. So he owned the Ford dealership. He worked Monday through Friday at the dealership. And my dad tells the story better than I do, but I was like a puppy dog at the window. You know, it's a townhouse. Now I was sitting there at the window, just glued to it, waiting for 5:30 on Friday when he'd come over. He'd walk straight down to his boat, you know, go inside, and I was right there at the front door, you know, beating it down, and he'd let me in. He'd always put on boiled peanuts, you know, cooked boiled peanuts, and I'd sit there and just rip through fishing magazines one at a time. And looking back, it's probably annoying. You know, I'm like, hey, Uncle Bill, what's this fish? What's this fish? Where do you catch this? What's this fish? You know, it's before the internet.
Yeah.
And he answered every question, and that's where I got the passion right there. So he's, you know, and they're still to this day best friends. So if I call my dad, he doesn't answer, I call Bill, and they're together. So
nice.
It's almost like, you know, family that's not blood related.
And so the opportunity to go on the trips is one thing for a 9-year-old. At what point do you start, tying knots, rigging ballyhoo, doing whatever, catching bait? All that.
Yeah, I mean, I was like a sponge. So that's on the offshore at 9, but even as early as like 2 and 3 years old, we grew up on the water. So I was out there, you know, just fishing off the seawall. And looking back, it's cool how different things are today for kids.
Yeah.
With the internet, with things like this, with the podcast. I mean, there's so much technology that kids can learn from, which I don't know if it's good or bad, but for me, you know, at 2 and 3 years old, barely walking out to the seawall and just, you know, probably doing everything wrong to learn how to do it right. So, I mean, I wish I had some of those first, you know, poles and knots and stuff where I could see what I did, but that was, you know, self-learning curve there off the seawall. It just immediately fell in love with it. I always loved fishing, you know, since as early as I can remember.
That's cool. There have been a lot of snappers caught on a double granny knot.
Yeah.
Over the day. I mean, I watched my kids do the same thing. You know, we lived on the canal, and they would, you know, peanut butter and jelly sandwiches wrapped around the hook with a double granny knot, and some of the best snappers I've ever seen are caught like that. That's awesome.
Yep.
That's a great place for a kid to grow up.
My dad's got a funny story because, you know, back then it was shrimp on a hook, you know, off the dock. That was our go-to. And I would bug my dad. The bait shop was 10 minutes down the road. And, you know, I'd burn through 3 or 4 dozen shrimp in 20 minutes. Say, hey, Dad, I need more shrimp. So he'd run back up there. And one day after about his fifth trip back and forth to the bait shop, he's like, hey, like he didn't want to go anymore. He goes, son. He goes, one of the best baits is right there. And I'll never forget. It was a sea grape tree that was in the yard. And he goes, yeah, that's the secret bait I haven't told you about. So I kind of looked at him kind of weird and looked at the sea grape and figured it out. But I started tearing that into little pieces. And I guess I worked it good enough to finally catch a fish on it. I thought it was the magic secret bait. So that's artificial guys will love that story.
That's what you can take on a tournament these days is a sea grape with you for good luck, you know?
Yeah.
Do you have a good luck? I see that your charter's called No Bananas, so you obviously have bad luck. Is there a good luck?
Definitely. Probably my lucky no banana socks, which is kind of ironic.
What do they look like? Are they yellow?
Yeah, they're actually blue, but they have a banana with a big old no sign through it. So
what
those,
do you think?
I wear those.
I think
every
that
day.
Bouncer Smith would take on a bad day, he would take those off of you and be like, there is a banana on the sock, even though it has a red line through it, it's still on there.
I've I've evolved over the years. I used to be so intense with the no bananas. I wouldn't want yellow. I used to have yellow braid, and I realized one day that's too close to a banana. So no yellow braid, no, I mean, nothing, no banana boat sunscreen. Even back in the day, the old Hanes underwear had the, or Fruit of the Loom, yeah, had the little banana on it. I mean, it was anything that closely resembled a banana was an absolute no. And it's, I know a lot of guys are on both sides of the fence on that. Nick Stanzik and everyone, you know, they'll dress up like bananas and catch fish, and it's all good. But I mean, we're out there too many days a year. Something's eventually going to happen. And if I have a banana on board, I guarantee that's why it's going to happen.
So from a young age, it was no bananas. Did you have an experience with bananas?
No, I never had. No, I don't even know when.
That's not something you wanted to mess with.
It's like, why play with fire?
I'm with you.
And I do like bananas. If I have a day off, I'll eat a banana. So I'm not against them on land.
So do you think that it's okay if the banana's in you?
No, I have like a 32-hour rule.
32-hour rule. Well, there is the, I know that. Like that, I think Rick Murphy told me that one time. I was eating a banana, and he was like, "Yeah, but it's going to be in you tomorrow." And I was like, right? "Oh, I never really thought about that." But I do like bananas. I got a friend, Anthony Randazzo. Do you know him? He's up in Louisiana. He goes the other way, and he's like, he's taking a banana on like 5,000 charters. I've got a picture of him netting a redfish. He's got a banana in one hand. He's half eaten banana in one hand. He's netting this big redfish in the other. But he always has banana. I don't know, but I mean, there's like, why if that is something that that you think could possibly mess up your mindset, mess up your attitude, mess up something, why mess with it? Why have one?
That's the thing. And I don't like bananas that much to have to have one on the boat. So yeah, again, like I said, why play with fire?
So over all of these years, you obviously have all your clients ask you why no bananas. Do you tell them stories? Like, I've always heard like three different stories about the banana, but I'd like to hear what you have to say about the bananas.
I might have the same three, because it is three, so it goes back. And it's the first hour of every trip that I have with new clients.
Right.
Yeah, that's the first thing that pops up. And I even have some that think they're funny, and they'll bring one banana. I had one guy bring a whole like bushel, like 70 of them. And I didn't even laugh. He showed up, and I mean, he thought it was funnier than I did, but I said, "Hey, if you want to bring him, that's fine." I go, I don't mind. You're the one paying for the trip. I said, we're not going to even cast a line though. We can go out to the sandbar and hang out. Like, we don't have to leave the dock. So yeah, it's one of those things. But the three theories I've heard, and yours might mimic this, goes back. I call it the pirate days to make it sound cooler, but the immigration days. So one theory is that the bananas, the bushels back then, you know, could have a spider in it. It was a 2-month journey to cross the Atlantic. You don't want to risk getting bit. That one's got some truth. It's kind of cheesy in my opinion. The other theory is that bananas give off like a nitrous or a gas that, and this is true today, you know, in your kitchen, if a banana starts to spoil, it's going to spoil all your other fruit around it. Mm-hmm. So they didn't want to risk losing all their fresh fruit. That's theory two. Theory three, I think the bad luck version of it, is that back then, if a ship or a boat were to sink, they didn't have life jackets. There was nothing. There was no plastic. There was nothing bright, that visual, that floated, except for bananas. So one boat may see another boat that sunk, see people floating in the water and see yellow bananas and say, "Oh, yeah, that's not good."
Yeah, stay away from that. I've heard all of those. There's one other one that was like about some king, and bananas were the fruit of royalty, and then these fishermen stole the bananas and took off on a fishing trip, and he put a hex or a curse on all fishermen with bananas. That's the other one I've heard. I don't know. Probably, who knows? Maybe there's got to be something to it, because it's stuck around for a long time.
Yeah. Yeah. And I'm probably going to pass it on. I mean, I named my whole business No Bananas, you know, sport fishing. So I'm going to pass it on without knowing the true answer. And it's one of those mythical things. Yeah, I'm sure there's other good luck and bad luck things out there.
Would you ever own a yellow boat?
No, 100%.
I wouldn't either. I wouldn't either. No. I mean, it's kind of like, you know, I'm not like, I can have bananas. I don't mind bananas. I don't bring them. It's not like I'm going to make my lunch and be like, "Oh, there's a banana in here." But, you know, I could go either way on it. I just kind of, I'm kind of like you. I kind of like, well, if there's a possibility that there's any bad luck associated with it, why take an apple? Like, why do you want a banana? Right. So yeah, there's a lot of things that can happen out there.
Yeah, and I don't eat on the boat anyways, so a banana or not, but I got the nickname Captain Banana or Captain Bacon Bits. So I do have a, you know, bananas are bad luck, bacon bits are good luck. That's all I eat. And if you look through my boat upstairs, downstairs, there's stashes of just cheap bacon bit containers everywhere.
Where does that start? How do you start eating bacon bits on the boat?
Well, just like bananas, you know, kind of bad luck theory. The bacon bits is a weird one. It was going back probably maybe 8 or 9 years. We fished the Kingmaster tournament out of Biloxi, Mississippi. So it was myself and two couples was the team. So we trailered a 36 Yellowfin from Sarasota up to Biloxi. So, you know, I'm the kind of the fifth wheel, and I'm sitting there with these two couples. We get to Biloxi, Mississippi, and, you know, get the boat in the water, get everything done. The two couples go to freshen up and shower. I'm not a big gambler, but we stayed at the Golden Nugget. So I went straight down to the craps table. I'm not a big gambler, but I was up pretty good. You know, middle of the day, I'm playing by myself, and I'm like, damn, I got some money in my pocket. This is fun. So next thing I know, the two couples come down. They go, hey, let's make a grocery run. We're going to go get groceries, you know, because we were going out for basically 4 days for this tournament. And I said, here, just take this money. You know, I'm easy. I'll eat anything. Just go ahead and, you know, get me whatever. So the owner of the boat, he goes, well, we're a team and we should all go together. And, you know, I'm not really wanting to go to the grocery store at this point. Like, I'm not a gambler, but I'm up big on the craps table. I don't want to leave to go to Publix or whatever. So, sure enough, he's the owner of the boat. It's his call. So I've just got my head down, not wanting to go. We end up at Walmart in Mississippi getting groceries together. Mm-hmm. So I wasn't in the best mood to do that. I just remember getting four cases of Coors Light, cracking one open right in the middle of Walmart, and just upset. They're getting their, I cannot say this word, charcuterie.
Yeah.
So, I mean, they're two couples. They're getting all their cheese and all that stuff for it, and I'm just not having it. So I go down the aisle, I see the bacon bits. I don't even know if I like bacon bits at the time, but I grab every one of them I see, throw them in the cart. So I got four cases of Busch Light and 20 bottles of bacon bits. And I go, that's it, I'm out of here. So I leave. I said, I paid for it. I said, I'll Uber back. You guys meet me at the casino. So sure enough, they stuck to their guns. They said, you can't have any of our food with that attitude. So I lived off Coors Light and bacon bits, and we ended up finishing second in the tournament. So it's
that's a breakfast of champions right there.
Yeah, and the other four people on the boat, they can't even smell bacon bits now. I guess every time I opened it, they could smell it. But
well, there is a lot of sodium in those things, so you got your electrolytes covered if you're sweating heavy.
Yeah, I don't know if it's a healthy diet, but
Captain Bacon Bit. All right, I got you. I like it. So with all the different types of fishing that you've done and done professionally and competitively, do you find – Like some of the things that I've done as well are on different ends of the spectrum, right? Like fly fishing for trout and, you know, maybe deep dropping for swordfish. I don't know. Like just something that's so different from one another. Do you find yourself drawing similarities either in the way that you learned something about this particular fish in a different part of the world and something that you do back home? And I just find that really interesting with people that are really well-rounded anglers about the similarities that they draw between very different fish and very different fisheries.
100%. And I'm actually excited to do this podcast with you because we don't know each other that well, but I kind of followed you over the years. And I see that we have a lot of similarities as far as you going A to Z.
Yeah.
You know, from fly fishing to sword fishing. There's so many similarities and there's so many things. I think it makes you a better overall angler because some people, they might be the best at their one target species. That's all they do 12 months a year and they're great at it. But for those people, I think it's harder to try new things because you're going to stick with what works.
Especially as you get older, right? Like,
right. Yep. And it's one of those. And you can't blame somebody saying, hey, this is how I've always done it. I've always caught fish. But they're a little bit maybe more afraid to step out of the box where I love doing it and you can implement, I think, without even thinking about it. Maybe it's a different way you tied a knot or a different, you know, fish faster or slower. There's a lot of similarities, but a lot of differences too, where if you do cross it, especially if the fishing's slow, and not every day is a good day out on the water. So when it's slow, that's where I like to kind of say, you know, my last good fishing trip was doing this in this area, and it might be totally different fishery, different area of the world. But you try those techniques, you blend them over, and all of a sudden you catch fish.
Yeah.
I think it just makes you a better over-rounded fisherman at the end of the day.
Yeah, I do too. That's actually one of my favorite things is crossing over into different areas and then using something that you've learned something else somewhere else and having it work, right? Like especially on a slow day, but even on a good day, you know, you go someplace and that's just the way they've always done it, and you do something a little bit different and it works really well. That to me is like really cool. But you know,
Yeah,
I
that's
mean, I kind of enjoy the variety, and I kind of enjoy the pursuit of being the complete angler, the all around angler, somebody that can maybe not be best at any of it, but be able to do at least do all of it, right? But the
Yep.
fishing is a big, I mean, it's a big world out there. There's a lot of types of fishing. I mean, to be able to do all of it, that's a lifetime pursuit. It really is.
100%. Yeah.
And to be
Yeah.
able to
And
do
that's.
all of it in saltwater is one thing. To be able to do all of it in freshwater, but then to be able to cross over and do it confidently and have passion for all of it is
Yeah.
something.
Yeah. And I'm on the water like 320 days a year on average. And there's, you started out, asking what my favorite is. It's not one easy answer because I fish so hard. Like we have tarpon season coming up. I'll run, 90 days straight without a day off. I love it to death. I'm passionate about it. About that 88th day, I'm kind of over it. But then I get right back in, to bill fishing in July and August. Then I'll go hard at that until September. By the time I get burnt out, then boom, it's back to inshore fishing in Tampa Bay. So I think that's how being well-rounded and being able to target different species, different techniques. It keeps me fresh. It keeps me going. As much as I love each one of the species and the ways I fish, if I did it 12 months a year, I probably would have burned out years ago.
Right.
It,
Yes.
it can be a grind doing the exact same thing every single day.
Yeah.
But it's a new challenge just going after a different fish and figuring it out and letting those seasons turn over. I don't think it'll ever get old.
Well, the learning part is such a big refresher. Like I used to just fish tarpon, fly fishing for tarpon from February till late, mid July, right? And then I mean it's just the same thing every day. And then when I had kids, I got a bay boat, and then I started taking my kids around the mangroves and doing stuff. And I was just like, man, this is amazing. Like, I was learning all this stuff that you just pass by every single day. It's like, well, there are fish over there. Like, they might be
Yeah.
snappers or something, but my kids are loving it. And then it just ignited this new kind of passion about learning. And that to me kept things going, like the learning part. And I'm sure that's the same for you. Like when you're doing stuff like you're doing, you kind of, I mean, there's always learning, but if you're on the same milk route, I mean, you've been doing it for 15 years, how much more can you learn about that? I mean, there's always something to learn, I would think.
Yeah.
But
Oh, yeah. I mean, every day too. It's every single day you leave the dock, you're always constantly learning.
for
It's uh
sure.
I
So
mean when I do fish.
when you're booking your schedule for the year, do you have hard, fast dates? Like, I'm gonna tarpon fish until this date, and then I'm gonna move to something else. Go, you kind of went through it just a little bit, but go a little bit more specifically. Like, what are your seasons?
Yeah, so if I were to start the year, say in January, January, February, there's a lot of Costa Rica fishing mixed in down there. I've been part of a team down there for the last couple of years. I'm a 68 Viking. They're really dialed in Los Sueños. So that's a lot of wintertime because the fishing's slow in Tampa Bay. So we can do Costa Rica in the wintertime, January, February, and then usually March, come back. That's when the inshore fishing's real good in Tampa Bay. So March and April, a lot of snook, trout, redfish in Tampa Bay. And then, everyone asks when is tarpon season? There's not a date. There's not an open date or a closed date. But for me personally, I run my personal tarpon season. It's May 1st through July 12th. May 1st is just when the big migratory fish are in. I can guarantee if we go out May 1st, we're gonna have shots at tarpon. They show up as early as March, but I don't like targeting a species that may or may not be or hit or miss. You know, we get them as bonus fish, but basically May 1st. And people say, well, why July 12th? That's an odd date, but that's give or take about when ICAST is, you know. So whatever date ICAST is, that's when I end my tarpon season, go to ICAST for a couple of days. Then I literally leave Orlando, go straight down to Key West for the Key West Marlin Tournament, which I've done for 35 years. So we do Key West Marlin Tournament and then mini season in the Keys, stay down there for a couple of weeks. And then you get into August, which is kind of a slow time of fishing a lot of times, but we'll do a little bit of bill fishing out here on the West Coast, make some runs out there, whether it's for tournaments, or we'll just go out on a meet run or a fun run. So that kind of wraps up my August. And then September, we're back to good inshore fishery in Tampa Bay. September, October is really good red fishing here, into November. And then December is when I do take off some days,
Nice.
you know, Christmas, things like that. So
At 320,
that's kind of it.
man, 320 is that's every day, man. I mean, there's 365 days in the year, but dang, I mean, that's only 40 days or so.
Yeah, and those are the days off. Everyone's like, that's cool, you get a day off. Well, I mean, even after we get done today, it's technically it's a day off because it's blowing 30 right now and raining. So my day off is putting a rain jacket on and going to doing my 100-hour service on my engine. You know, it's I guess this would be considered a fun day off for a guy.
Fun day.
We don't get the those sunny days, you know, that's when I'm on the water. So it's the rainy days we get to catch up on life.
Right. How many boats do you have? Do you just operate one boat?
No, so I currently own a 22 Ranger bay boat and then a 24 Almirada bay boat. And then we have a 25 Parker. I also have a commercial stone crab business. So that's a commercial boat. And then I fish on a 42 Yellowfin, a 63 Hatteras, and then a 31 Bertram we're going to have up and running down in Costa Rica. One of my teammates there. I'll be kind of running, you know, fishing some trips on that with personal clients coming down. So all around. And then I freelance on boats too here and there. You know, people see my experience and I'll jump on as a teammate. And I
Nice.
don't mind working the cockpit or driving or whatever they need. Like I say, I'll say yes to. So.
Yeah, that's awesome. And then the stuff that you're going to other places in the world, do you'll just cram a trip in there somewhere if you get an opportunity?
It's hard to say. Like I don't plan much that. I do a lot of Bahamas trips actually,
Yep.
and those are typically. I got some buddies on the East Coast of Florida, and those trips are. I wouldn't say they're planned out more than 2 weeks in advance. It's usually, you know, see a weather window here, the fishing's
Right.
good, and leave out of Palm Beach. You know, run Abacos or whatnot. Go for like 2 or 3 days, come back. So it's usually those good weather windows. If we were to plan a trip like that a month or two out, you know, then I have to cancel my charters for those 3 or 4 days, plan on going. The weather's could be bad, so
Right.
it's those are pop-up trips, and I'll do 4 or 5 of those a year.
Yeah, nice. That's pretty awesome, man. You're really going after it hard. Do you get tired?
No, and I it goes back to doing, you know, different things. So there's always different species. I think if I did the same thing for more than, you know, 6 months at a time, I certainly would get tired. No
Yeah.
matter what species that is or where I'm at in the world, I think I gotta keep moving and bouncing and keeping it fresh. But no, it's I since actually since October, and I know you're a big workout guy. I mean, I hate to admit, I've never really worked out in my life because I figure, okay, I'm in the sun. I'm actually doing physical work out there on the boat. I don't need to work out. But I got my wife a Peloton for her birthday October, and I'm on that thing more than she is, and
Really?
it's addicting. I'm 7 days a week on it, and
Really?
that's actually I thought I was too tired to have time to work out, but that's certainly boosted my energy. I know
Yeah.
you know all about that, but that's keeping me going even more. So I got tarpon season coming up around the corner. Like I said, I'll run 90 days straight. I'm excited to keep on that workout routine and see if I get that extra energy boost.
I think you will. I think you absolutely will. That was, I mean, people have asked, like, I did long stretches like that, and that's what it all came down to, is that I just got in better shape and I was able to go longer. And when I was out there, I was able to stay attentive and stay excited about it. And it was just, when you're in better shape, it's just easier. Everything's easy. Everything's just a little bit easier if you're in really great shape. It's cool that you've got that. How much are you riding? Like, you're riding like for an hour or 30 minutes or?
I'm doing different programs. I think on that, the classes are so fun, and it's got this stupid leaderboard and those little things where
that's fun,
your
though.
Friends. Yeah, well, that's the thing. I at first I'm like, this is kind of cheesy, and I only learned it. I was setting it up for my wife, and I did a 5 minute like warm up ride. I haven't ridden a bike since I was a kid, so I did a 5 minute warm up ride, and like two of my friends, I don't even know how, saw I guess on my email address or whatever that I was on there. So I followed them back or whatnot, and it keeps you it keeps you on your toes. But I'll ride 7 days a week, so I'm about 260 miles a month.
Nice.
And it's there's no really, I don't really have any goals or anything on there. Just like however much time I have, I'll do a 10 minute class sometimes. I'll do 45 minutes, an hour, you know, whatever it is. So I don't really have personal goals yet. But it is cool seeing how much I'm riding.
And you've noticed a
100%. Oh yeah. Yeah. It basically in the energy level, I lost like 16 pounds doing it, but
really
the main thing is that energy level. And I don't mind getting up at 5 o'clock doing, you know, 30 minutes, however much time I have before I go catch bait. Originally thinking I'd be tired doing that, but I just, it's like an extra boost of coffee in the morning.
I think
that,
it is. So. I mean, I think it is, but you know, working 320 days a year is brutal. I think you need all the help you can get to do that. And for me, it was exercise. I used to run a lot when I was working like that, and running was good. But man, I was just telling my friend this morning, it's like I had to have my shoes and my shorts and everything like in the truck. So because if I walked into the air conditioning, it's over.
Yeah.
I mean, it's over. You're not stepping back out there to go running.
Yeah.
So I would have to like I wouldn't even do anything. I wouldn't wash my boat or anything. Just go put the shoes on and go. Wouldn't walk in to see the kids, anything. Just step
air
out.
Air conditioning is the devil. I'm the same way, like out there. Because our bill fishing here in the West Coast, Florida, is in the hottest months, July and August. And I love working the cockpit. I love getting out there and sweating. You know, it's nice inside the comfy 63 Hatters. It's nice and comfy in there in the air conditioning. But I don't go inside.
Right.
You know, if I want food or a drink or anything, I'll have somebody bring it to me out in the cockpit sweating, because it's 2 minutes in there and then you're done.
You might as well go to sleep. I mean, you just don't want to go back out. And you do want to go to sleep. And if they're in there, how many times do you hook a fish and somebody doesn't even want to come out and reel it in?
Exactly.
Right.
Like. Yep. Yep.
It can happen. So, what is that trip like? Is that a multi-day trip or is that a single day? Or
yeah, no. Out of here, we'll usually for tournaments. So we'll leave the dock on Wednesday. Like kind of chug out there, and basically the spot isn't the same every year. It's or every tournament. It's wherever the loop current is off the West Coast. So. There's times it's 80, 85 miles offshore, and there's times it's 150 miles offshore. So we use satellite imagery and everything.
Yeah, that's what I was going to ask, how you're finding that loop current, the satellite imagery.
Yeah, so basically the temperature breaks. So wherever you find a temperature break, if you can find a 2-degree temperature break or a 3-degree temperature break, that's exactly where you want to be. Modern technology makes that easy. There's, you know, Hilton Report, Roth Report. Now everything's even dialed into your electronics. So you can get it up to the minute, and then you can get Starlink on the boat, so you can be offshore and even get updates. But basically, if you get a 2 or 3 degree temperature break, that's where the currents are going against each other, and that's where your weed lines are going to build up. So it's kind of a easy way to know where the weed lines are. You find the weed lines, you find the bait, and you find the fish. So we'll leave the dock Wednesday morning, kind of chug out there. You know, let's say 80 to 120 miles typically. We'll swordfish all night. So the tournaments, you can fish 24 hours a day. So we'll swordfish usually all Thursday night, wake up, you know, lines in, at sunrise, we'll put our marlin lines out there, and we'll troll artificials out here. So we cover ground. You get 8 to 10 knots. That's a lot of ground in daylight hours. So if we find a good area, we'll zigzag that the entire day. If it's not a good area, we keep the lines in. We don't run and gun. So when the lines go in at sunrise, we don't pull them out till sunset.
Wow.
So we fish all day, and then that'll be Friday night, sword fish all night. Saturday morning, we troll for a little bit, and I usually come back. The weigh-ins usually on Saturday evening, so it's 3 or 4 days straight. We're fishing the entire time.
And then you got a do you have to take a day off, or can you go straight into a charter the next day?
That Sunday,
because
I
brutal.
don't I, yeah and I like to fish. I mean, I take little cat naps here and there, but I like to fish the entire time. So usually when we're sword fishing at night, that can be really, really boring out there. So I'll sleep in a bean bag out there in the cockpit, and probably not smart if you ever see me without a toe. That means we got a big fish, because I'll put my foot up on the reel to kind of feel the bite if I don't hear it. But it's in the back of my mind that that toe could get wrapped around that line pretty
Sure.
quick. So
What about the stars out there? Are you seeing some
that's
incredible?
awesome. Yeah, it's one of those things. Actually, Joe Rogan was talking about that the other day. That's why I fell in love with hunting. Where he said, what was the stars itself? And it's something I never thought about until he said that. It's just it's a bonus of being out there, and it's a grind. There's two ways to look at going offshore for that many days. It can be hot and sweaty and rough and nasty, but things like that, seeing nature, see whales every once in a while, or just cool stuff you don't typically see. And certainly the stars out there, we have so much light pollution. No matter how big and fancy your house or your neighborhood is on land, there's light pollution everywhere. So really, the people that hunt and fish are the only people that, regardless of how much money you might have or not have, if you can get out there in that wilderness like that, the middle of the woods, or the middle of the Gulf of Mexico, or the ocean somewhere, it's an amazing thing. It makes you realize like how small you are in the universe. It's kind of cool.
For sure. When you get to a place like, I was in Africa one time, maybe the best stars I've ever seen, probably in Africa. And we just stopped and we just all just looked up, and it was amazing. But when you get out and you're doing that nighttime sword fishing, or you're camping in Yellowstone or doing some awesome thing, it makes you realize like that was like what old, like before TV, before the internet, before all this other stuff. That's what people did for entertainment, is like look at the stars every night, campfire stars. And they were so connected to the stars. And you see that in architecture, and you see that in like the way the pyramids are lined up, and all of it is associated with the stars. And we've gotten so far away from that when you take somebody someplace where they haven't seen it, and like a kid these days, that'll be the first time they've seen the stars like that. It's amazing. It really
Yeah,
is.
that's something you can't recreate. That's probably one of the coolest things I've seen in real life, with my own eyes, that I've never, there's no point in even taking a picture of it.
Right.
It's like one of those things that it's never, you can't duplicate it. So whether you take a picture or video or show anybody when you get back, it's not going to have that same feeling. It's hard to describe, but it's cool talking to someone else that has experienced it. And it's just one of those things that, regardless of how old you are, or what your background is, I mean, you see those stars, you're like, wow, that's pretty cool.
I mean, when you really see them in a dark place like that, like way out in the Gulf of Mexico, or like, I don't know, middle of the ocean, or like Yellowstone National Park is a real good one. If you camp there, that there, it's like the furthest place in the continental United States you can find, the furthest place away from a road, from a paved road in the continental United States, in Yellowstone National Park. But, all over Montana and Idaho and Wyoming and those areas, you can find some really dark places where there are not many lights around, and the difference is just crazy. Like to look up there, and when you really get there, you can see depth between the stars, and you can tell like some are like further away than others, and or at least it looks that way. And even if it's real dark in your backyard and you look up, it kind of all looks like it's kind of, you know what I'm talking about? Like
Yeah,
when you really
it's
get
like
in those dark
3D.
places, yeah, it's 3D, and it's just, it's hard to even describe to somebody that hasn't seen it. But it's just, I don't know. I did see, we did this thing where we went tarpon fishing with night vision goggles. And I had one of my friends that's an elite military guy, and he has really, really, really good night vision goggles. And the thing about the night vision is that you see the stars just anywhere, like you do out, like what we're talking about. I mean, you look up And I just couldn't, I almost couldn't take my eyes off the sky at night. I was like, oh my God, you see every star because it accentuates any light that's up there. You see it. So that was the coolest thing. I mean, seeing the tarpon at night was, that was obviously very cool, but I kind of expected that. What I didn't expect was looking up and being able to see the stars like I saw in Africa or like you're talking about way out in the middle of the ocean. Just that was unexpected and super cool. I can't even imagine what that would look like when you got in a really dark place and then you put the night vision goggles on. You would see stars that are impossible to see. But it picks up every little star, and the whole sky just looked amazing. It was so cool.
That's cool. That's one of the cool things about fishing too and hunting is I think we get to experience places that not your normal person, not normal destinations, you know. A good fishery isn't necessarily a good hotel, destination.
Right.
it's cool. Not, some are, but most aren't, to be honest. You know, and I know you've had a lot of guests on here that have done way cooler stuff than I have as far as, different countries and different places around the world.
I don't know, man. You're up there.
Yeah. I mean, everyone's got a cool story, but it's just cool that the destinations that fishermen and hunters, get to see that. There's really no other reason to travel to those places if you don't hunt or fish.
Right.
A person that likes the spas, they're not going to go to 99% of the places that people like you and me would travel to. And we get to experience the things like you just explained, the stars. There's some people that will never get to see the stars like that. It's kind of sad because they're right there above our head every night.
I know.
Just never get to see it.
I know. Since you started fishing 9 years old, you've done all these different trips for all these different species and things. What do you think are a couple of things that come to mind that have changed either technologically or any sort of advancement that have made the biggest changes in your particular fishing, what you do?
Definitely electronics, anything from inshore to offshore, that's the biggest thing. I could probably go on forever about this, things as simple as weather apps, even,
right.
Everyone jokes that the weatherman's always wrong and this and that, but, they're not always 100% right, but they're definitely getting better. And then the access that we have to, different weather apps for fishing, especially offshore, you really want to know what your wind conditions are, but even inshore, I'll plan my trips based around the wind direction and speed about, where I'm going to start, everything else. And I've realized a lot of the, I'm not a big sailboat fan. I don't really
can't fish off a single one of them.
Yeah. So, sorry to any sailcast, but, I'm not a big sailboat fan, but when it comes to technology, I will admit that their apps for finding the wind is pretty cool. Cause they care more about the wind than we do, but I certainly, love, seeing the wind and the wind direction. And some of those apps are pretty dialed in. So that would be on the smaller version of technology that's come a long way, but it certainly helped. And then you get into the bigger stuff. Obviously side scan technology has come a really long way. A lot of that stuff, starts out in military grade or maybe search and rescue. And then they get it down, towards cost effective for the average angler to get it. I can say for tarpon fishing, 1,000%. I did 4 or 5 years in a row down in Boca Grande. Tarpon fishing, and without a side scan there, I would have caught half the fish I caught. With it, you're finding schools of tarpon that might be 200 or 300 feet to your left or right of the boat that with a traditional sonar you never would have seen those fish. And then you go to the next step, and you go to the sonars on the big sport fish. That's almost become mandatory.
That's what I was going to ask you about, that, like how that's changing that culture and that those tournaments and that fishing.
So we're in a transitional period offshore, I think, right now. So going back maybe 3 years ago, we were tournament fishing in Costa Rica, and we were one of the probably, I'd say, out of 50 boats in the tournament series, I think maybe 10 or 12 had the sonar. 360 sonar on it, and those 10 or 12 boats were typically the top 10 or 12 every single tournament. You could see all the stats online, you could see the boats, the sonar versus the non-sonar boats. They were just consistently in the top 10, to the point that the the owner of the boat I was on, he was watching one boat with a sonar just picking fish off of our stern left and right. Nothing wrong with it, but they just had better technology than we did. We didn't have a sonar and they did. So he finally said, you know what, pull this thing out. It's about $150,000 install, and something that as an owner of a boat or a lover of a boat, you don't want to watch because they literally drill a hole into the bottom of the boat to install it. So it's a scary sight to see for sure. But what's it saying? I mean, you get dialing in on that. We can spot a single sailfish, you know, 1700 feet away from the boat in any direction, 360
1700
degrees.
1700 feet.
Yeah.
Wow.
And it's like the old Top Gun, you know, technology where they did spot lock, you know, on the other plane or whatnot. Yes. You can almost spot lock on that sailfish, and every ping on the radar, you can see which direction they're moving and get pretty dialed in. So when I say we're in a transitional period offshore, you get some of these big money tournaments. If you don't have that sonar, you're not really excited about spending a ton of money and fishing against these sonar boats for a lot of money. So right now I'm seeing most of the tournaments do a sonar and a non-sonar division, mm-hmm. which I don't know if I agree with, because the money is now getting split. So you're splitting everything. And I understand both sides of it 100%. I get why the guys in the sonar, you know, don't want everybody in and vice versa. But if all the boats go in, it's going to be a bigger jackpot for everybody. But it's hard to argue with the technology. You know, a non-sonar boat is 100% at a disadvantage.
Yeah.
You can't see those fish. It might only take one or two fish to be the difference in first place versus third place.
Yeah. I find it interesting that they're creating rules about, you know, there's two divisions, because the same thing's going on in bass fishing. In fact, I just had Jacob Wheeler on just the other day, and he has one without forward-facing sonar, and he's one with forward-facing sonar, and there's just like a whole group of people that are so against this technology, think it's going to ruin the sport, they think whatever. I had a interesting idea. I thought, well, what if you got six tournaments, what if you could only use it in a certain number of those tournaments, or for a certain number of hours on those tournaments or something? And then, boy, now you got a lot of strategy that goes in. Like, right. I'm going to use it in this tournament, but not in this one. And maybe you make the right choice, maybe you don't. But it's interesting in the offshore world. I mean, it's kind of the same thing going on at a higher cost, like $150,000. But you could spend $60,000 on this other technology and forward facing sonar for bass fishing. So there's some people that say that it's not fair because some people can't afford it, but yeah, these are big boy tournaments, man. Like the tournaments that you're fishing in, that's where the big boys play. So if you want to step up to that line, don't you think that if that's what's required, then.
So here's funny. It's funny that you talk about Wheeler. So him and I are good friends going back to the, we were on the national team, Ebinrude team together in the day. And I got some funny stories about him catching his first redfish for sure. The bass guy's hook setting with a circle hook doesn't work too good.
Yeah, right.
But he finally got the hang of it. So he's a good guy. And when I met him, 10 years ago, whatnot, back on the national team for Ebinrude, it was mostly all bass guys. I was like the only saltwater guy on the team. And I don't know anything about bass fishing whatsoever. And it's funny, you know, talking about the big boy tournaments and this and that. And, you know, certain bill fishing, there's a lot of six figure checks are holding up, and you know, some guys even getting in the millions in some of these big tournaments. So it's easy to look at the pictures of a big check on stage and say, right. Wow, there's a ton of money in bill fishing. But after talking to Wheeler and some of the guys, those bass guys, that's where the money's at. Like if I had to go back in time and do it all over again and fish, if I was fishing for money, period, 100%, you got to be on the bass tour, because it's just, now I'm not saying that their stuff isn't expensive, but those guys sometimes will complain about burning like 150 gallons of fuel in a 3-day tournament. And I'm like, damn, man, we burn that catching bait before we even start
right,
the tournament,
exactly.
You know? So the technology levels come up, but it's as far as your profit margin on bass, you know, and then how we go back to some of these destinations that we go to are cool. You know, some of them for bill fishing are expensive as well. You know, you got Cabo San Lucas and some of these places are high end resorts, and you got your slip fees and everything else, and you know, the diesels, everything's just expensive. Where, you know, some of these bass lakes are beautiful, but there's nothing wrong with staying in a $40 a night La Quinta Inn or Red Roof Inn.
You know
that they get
or a lot of them camp, you know, they'll have one of the rigs is like, you got the whole camper, you know, cab over camper in the back, the Lance or whatever. And then they, when they get to the thing, they just leave that at the campground and go. That seems like a really good way, but man.
Yeah.
That's a hard way. I mean, there may be more money in it, but it is a hard way to make a living. It's kind of like being a rodeo cowboy or a professional wrestler.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
You're gone all the time. Very physical.
Yeah, that's why there's very few of the good ones. They're always at the cream of the crop, but I dabbled my toe in it on the FLW as a co-angler a couple of years ago.
Did you?
Yeah.
What'd you think?
It's actually a lot of fun.
Now, did you do the redfish tournaments? You did the redfish tournaments too, right?
I used to, yeah. Yep. But I did the FLW, the bass tour, which was it was fun because I put zero pressure on myself. You know, sometimes a lot of these captains, they won't do tournaments, period. And I understand it. I come from a tournament background. I love tournaments. But there's a lot of times that it's a lose-lose situation.
Yes.
As a guide, because if we win, everyone looks at us, you know, they go, okay, yeah, it's cool. Yeah, you won because you're a captain. You're full-time. Of course you won. Like, yeah, that's not fair. Like, you should have won it. And then if you don't win and, you know, the Weekend Warrior beats you, then all of a sudden you suck. It's
right.
Like, man, yeah, that guy lost. He's a full-time captain. He lost. Like, this guy over here, you know, won it. So I get, you know, it's a fine line when you dabble into those tournaments like that. But going into the bass tour, I did like six tournaments in the Southeast, and it was cool for me because I went in with zero pressure. I didn't really care. I mean, I wanted to catch at least one bass so I could go up on stage and weigh it in. But other than that, I knew I wasn't going to go in there and win it. And I'm not going to try to. I actually talked to Wheeler about it before I went for my first tournament. I said, what should I throw? I think the first tournament was in Lake Toho, over in the middle of Florida. I said, I'm fishing this tournament. Like, you know, what kind of lures should I get or whatever? And he sent me a list of about 7,000 different worms and all that. I walk into the Bass Pro Shops. I'm like, oh man, I'm not trying to do that. I'm not even trying to throw a bait caster. You know, So I showed up to my first tournament. It's kind of funny. You just get paired up with an angler the night before, so you don't know who it's going to be, and they're the pro. I was just a co-angler, so I had to walk up to the guy and it kind of a walk of shame and say, hey, you know, nice to meet you. I said, I got good news and bad news for you. You know, good news, I know my way around the boat. You don't have to worry about me. I'm fine. And I said, I got thick skin too. If you see me do something wrong, you know, feel free to lay into me. I can laugh it off. And I said, on the bad side, I don't know anything about bass fishing whatsoever. So I was like, man, if I could just catch one fish, I'm fine. So he kind of looks at me. He goes, all right. He goes, we're allowed to bring five rods and a backpack full of tackle. So he said, what do you bring? And I go, well, you're going to start making fun of me right away because I just brought spinning rods. And he was okay with it. He goes, well, I throw one every once in a while. But so I had basically my redfish rods with me and, you know, just a little bit of tackle and stuff. And he said, well, do you have anything with 65-pound braid? And I go, man, I said, you can make fun of me, but don't be like that. Like, you know, like, no, I don't have anything with 65-pound braid. And he was dead serious. I thought he was joking. But he was dead. I had all, you know, 15-pound braid. And he said, well, you're going to need 65. I'm like, how big are these fish on this lake, man? Like, 65-pound braid.
Catch a marlin with that.
20-pounders or something. He's like, oh, man, I'm on a good bite. You know, practice went good. A bunch of, like, 4 to 5 pounders. Now I'm really thinking the guy's messing with me. But yeah, we went punch fishing, which I learned a lot, you know, my first one. And it's not the size of the fish, it's the amount of weeds you get on there. But it's cool. And then again, not saying no to it. So I agreed to do that tournament series. I only did it one time, you know, one season, but it's something I would do again. I learned a lot.
Yeah. Well, that was the next question is what does that experience teach you that you apply somewhere else? Going back to kind of the original question, and this is a perfect situation to ask that. What is 6 tournaments on the bass tour teach you about marlin fishing, king fishing, anything, tournament preparation? I don't know. Like, how do you apply that experience to success in another area?
What's cool about that is it was like 6 tournaments with 6 different, 6 different anglers, you know, pros. So every one of them was different. how they prepared, where, how fast we fished, how long we spent in a spot. You know, we were different lakes every time, but just seeing that different techniques get to the same result. That was just in strictly bass fishing, but same thing. It's weird on that, you know, I'm sure subliminally a lot of that stuff did transfer over to what I do, but on the flip side, all these guys were kind of making fun of me, you know, my setups, and I didn't care. Like, I was just there to have fun. So I wasn't trying to rewrite the book and be the next Jacob Wheeler. I was there to have fun. But on the reverse side, you know, these guys had their 7,000 different types of worms and frogs and all that stuff. I literally brought like Mirror Lure Little Johns, which is my go-to artificial lure. And when I do fishing seminars, a lot of them are at like bait shops or tackle shops or West Marines, things like that, where they sell tackle. And I'll get up on stage, I'll do my thing. And that question comes up a lot, like, what's your favorite artificial lure? And my go-to is that Mirror Lure Little John. It looks horrible. It's a stick of plastic. I mean, it's not sexy at all. You go in the tackle shop, you know, section with all these live targets and all these, you know, pinfish looking baits that literally looks like you need to put that bait back in the water. You think it's dying in the package. That's how good they look. But it's just a little stick bait. There's nothing sexy to it. That's what I would bring on these bass tours. And all six of the guys I fished with, by the end of the day or the end of the tournament, I think they went out and bought them because it was catching fish. And it's just how I redfish or trout fish. You know, it's a lure. It's my confidence lure. It's how I know how to work it and use it. You can fish all different, you know, depths of water with it. So I was just out there using it. I literally my exact same redfish rig going onto these lakes and catching bass with it. So, you know, it's something that transferred over. And I'm telling these guys, like, hey, you have 7,000 different worms, but these bass live in a lake. And they've probably seen all 7,000 of those before. Yeah. You know, this is something new I'm throwing at them.
Something new that's then, super old, right?
Yeah. Like, and then on the flip side, though, I did use some, like, some Ned rigs, some things I wasn't familiar with. And I've used those and caught redfish on.
Sure.
And again, I think Tampa Bay redfish are very pressured. So maybe I'm throwing something at them that they haven't seen before. And there's... fishing is really easy to overthink or underthink. You know, sometimes it gets way too, I don't mean to stereotype, but these bass guys, they seem like they have so many lures and so many different things. Like, I mean, if you go to like a place like a Bass Pro Shops, if you go to the bass section, it's massive. It's aisles and aisles and aisles. Then you go to the saltwater section, there's just not that much diversity in the lures. I mean, sure, there's a lot, but not compared to freshwater versus saltwater. So I don't know. You can overthink and underthink fishing. And when I do my seminars, there's always one or two people in the back, you know, usually older people, old school, pen and paper, writing everything down, which is fine. I'm up there giving a talk anyways. You can take all my info. But I joke at the end of the seminar and I say, okay, everyone that took notes on the way out, you can just crumble that up and throw it in the trash. They kind of look at me at first like, whoa, man, like, you're giving your info. And I go, that's fine. Like, I don't care about the info, but every day I leave the dock and I go out there, those are all my theories. That's my experience over the last, you know, however many years, but that I prove my theories wrong every time I leave the dock. Yeah. So it's like, get out there and fish and just figure it out. I mean, that's what makes it fun. That's what makes the 320 days a year not be a grind. It's I learn every single day I go out there. So,
dude, that's awesome. I don't know that there's any better way to end this one other than asking you to come back. I'd love to go deeper on so many different things, and we got to get out together and fish sometime. I would love to fish with you.
Yeah, for sure.
But tell everybody how they can follow you, how they can go fishing with you, how they can support you in whichever way they can.
Yeah, being on the water that much, I'm not the best at answering my phone, so if you do want to get a hold of me, usually text message, 727-692-6664. Or the easiest way is on Instagram. It's at Captain Ryan Harrington. You can message me or follow me. I'll follow you back, and we'll go from there.
Right on. All right, man. Thanks, Ryan. I know that this is a rare day off for you, and I'm glad to have gotten this taken care of and gotten you on. Really nice to talk to you.
It's been a blast, and I appreciate it.
Yeah, awesome. Okay, that's it for today. We'll be back with another awesome guest just like Captain Ryan Harrington next week. See you then.